Yeah, so really, just such. I just want to start by appreciating the history that's here, and as I said before, the sense that there's already this co-forging of a path of Western Buddhism with engagement on social crises and climate ecology issues in particular, and the deep practice, the deep wisdom that's already been here. So I'm going to offer, you know, what I think, but this is, I think, I just want to say from the start, I feel very much in partnership, Lou and I feel very much in partnership with those around the world who have been going in this direction. And also to acknowledge the ways that we sometimes disqualify ourselves from such appreciation. You know, have I done enough? Am I doing anything? And even to have this heart want to show up for the process is something to appreciate. To again and again affirm that says, this is deeply connected to this, and I can't care for this without caring for all of this. That is something to just affirm and appreciate again and again. I have found it really helpful to look very closely at how it is we got here, how it is this could come to be, that we would so, in a way, alienate ourselves from the living world, from the web of life, that we could be endangering ourselves and so much life here on Earth. And to look very closely at the ways that that happens, not just in the minds of others, but in this mind, in this heart. So that is, for me, it's kind of come down to this examination of the objectification of nature, and so the nature of objectification. How does objectification work? So this seeing of other and reducing that to object instead of subject, and to something functional in our lives, as opposed to something unfathomable and deep and worthy of its own sacredness, of its own honoring. And so in that reduction, all I submit that all harm is enabled. When if we look either individually inside this heart mind, interpersonally or collectively, the beginning of harm is to reduce. Mm-hmm. So we see this in race dynamics, that there has to be a distancing of this other race in some diminishment, maybe a lot of diminishment, in order to justify exploitation, use, abuse. There has to be a reduction of the land into what I can extract from it, what we can make use of. So we have human resources and natural resources. Say no more. When that becomes the lens through which we see, it is the beginning of harm. As I said, it's helpful to see that the way that I reduce this internal. This jealousy gets reduced into something that is not deep and worthy of its own love in a way, but it's kind of in the way. So how can I engage more and more? What is this demand that I again and again imbue all that this heart mind encounters with that as a community of subjects, not this universe of objects. In the Dharma, I think the intersection for me here is about these three poisons, the reduction in the context of this reduction of other into the ways that we relate to it as greed, hatred, and delusion. This idea that this that I am greedy for will satisfy. If I only have this, I'll be satisfied. This is needed. This that I hate must go away, must be eradicated. Again, can we see that not just in the minds of others, but in this heart mind? The way that I do that, sometimes with the other who I see as the exploiter, the problem. The ways that we reduce each other and go to war. Either interpersonally, internally, or collectively. And that delusion bit is the hardest in a way, but it is, again, to see that the way I make this separate, knowable, known, got it. I know what that is. And as I'm guessing there are fans of Joanna Macy's work in the room, and her insight that what we're facing as a culture is institutionalized forms of greed, hatred, and delusion. So that when the CEO has a change of heart and starts to see the world as this unfathomable sacred ground, the board says, well, she's not working for profits anymore, we need to replace her. So this codified, the ways that this way of seeing gets codified into policies, into norms, so that even as we wake up individually, we're really, really swimming against an enormous, it's more than a stream, we swim against a river. So what is it that will support us in facing these institutionalized forms of greed, hatred, and delusion? How can we put a pillar in the center of that river that can withstand that current and carry us from one shore to the other? In Buddhist parlance, that's that central pillar of the bridge to the other shore. Taking from the Ikosapa training themes of the fall, if you participated in the fall theme, is practice. We open with ethics. The first pillar is ethics. Then we put this pillar in with practice to help us stand against that stream, moment to moment, coming back to a deeper understanding of what's true, as opposed to what's constantly coming at us. From a world that is disconnected from this way of looking. And then the third pillar is the wisdom that meets us from the other shore. And this is how we cross. I think this piece about the objectification, the nature of objectification and the objectification of nature, and that includes all of us, all of life. One way to sense into that is the way that we can experience practice in nature as so fundamentally different. Why? Why is that so nourishing? Because maybe the relationship is somehow corrected. If I walk through a forest, not everything is about humans. It's not all about me. This bush, this tree exists for itself. It's not been carved into a table that is then reduced to something functional. The truth is that table is still tabling. The wood is still taking that form. We can, you know, what is it? The Teocsin Ghost Horse said in that first Ikosapa training, he said, we can go all day without speaking a single noun. It's a wonderful way to practice. This is belling right now. You practice that way, it starts to, things start to get liquefied, right? A little bit. The dynamic nature. And that is not untrue. Huh? That will stand up to science. Screw me. Right? This is like thermacy. This is like, oh my goodness. No, it's not. This is striking. So even this, though, it, you know, it's for the first glance of that, I'm holding a striker, is to see its function, to see how it serves beings like me, even me, because maybe even it's mine. But if this is a branch in the forest that bends in a beautiful way, that catches my eye, it's not about me. And something is made equal. I'm brought down to maybe, and maybe that is that correction ignites something, inspires, even heals. So we come together in this space of Ecodharma. For a while, I think when Ecodharma was first calling it anything like that, which wasn't that long ago in the West, it was about, I mean, it was this Gary Snyder appreciating, seeing nature through this lens of Dharma in a way that was it's really illuminating, his poetry and other writers. There's a great volume called Dharma Rain, which looks at all these different angles on Ecodharma. It's an anthology. I really recommend it. Most of us who I hear this term from right now are focusing on the kind of, how can we bring the gifts of the Dharma to the ecological crisis? Seeking up this path, this middle way, trying to forge something that brings our care for the world, together with this path that seems all about accepting things the way they are. Like, wah-rah. And it's in that tension, I find that a very creative, helpful tension, to fully embrace that. To not find myself at war with the state that we're in, because this is the Buddha's insight, that is the definition of suffering, is to want things to be other than they are. But what do I do with my love and my sense that something has really gone afoul? I think that's not something that I would dare to put into words for any of us here, but I think it's a place of deep practice. To me, it's endless, that paradox. One not to be resolved, but to be lived in a way. So, this longing, a longing for a perception that we sense is here, for a shared view of this world that values and honors and protects, as if our lives depended on it, because they kind of do. They kind of are that. And this climate crisis, the species loss crisis, this deforestation, the emptying out of the forests, the emptying out of the oceans, it's heartbreaking. And it's one of many social crises underway right now. The loss of cultural diversity, justice, issues, racial equality, gender equity, peace and disarmament, an economy that actually works for all of us. I mean, these are worthy endeavors. So how is it that we put our own love in that context? Because it's really tempting, and I myself have done this in the past, to play what I call the climate card. It's like, this is the issue that everyone needs to be working on, because without a functioning climate, there can be no gender equity, there can be no racial equity, if we're all, you know, it's all gone to hell in a handbasket. And the reality is, for most people in the world, the climate crisis is not a climate emergency that trumps the emergency that's on their front door. They have more pressing concerns than an understanding of a biosphere that's not functioning within historical parameters. It's not so pressing. And maybe that has a lot to do with the comfort and safety that my people, that I have enjoyed. And so the climate crisis does become my emergency, but only because I don't have more pressing emergencies. So what do we do with that? Recognizing that we need some kind of movement here. We need some sort of understanding. Part of the answer to that for me is to bring it back to this understanding of causes and conditions, this institutionalized greed, hatred, and delusion that then takes many forms. And then to also bow to each other. Bow to each other's heart's longing. Bow to the idea of teamwork. That Julia might feel deeply called to work in the U.S. on gun control. Thank you, Julia. Please do that. I feel moved to work on the climate crisis. But when the storms come, the fewer guns on the street, the better. And if Mark feels called to work on race equity, I bow to Mark. Because as the storms come, the more the social fabric has cohesion, we can really do this together. So there's something, you know, I absolutely love Paul Hawkins' analogy of Gaia's immune system. That all of us around the world, in these little nonprofits who get accused of being really disorganized and not having a good strategy, because we don't have a sort of global plan for how this all fits together, are actually very much like any mammal's immune system, that it is diffuse in its nature, that it doesn't have, unlike the circulatory system and the nervous system, it doesn't have a central organ that runs the show. The tongue is part of the immune system. It'll spit out something that just doesn't taste right. The nose says, uh-oh, smells like poison, gotta get out of here. It protects white blood cells, the way healing happens, all the closing, open wound, close it up. So much intelligence responding to proximate threat, following, if you will, their calling. I really, it makes me angry how we on the progressive left are tearing each other apart for not, you know, the ways that we just do not bow to each other's diversity. We really do need each other. And if you're following your heart's longing, please may you be wildly, wildly successful. Okay, that's a soapbox bit. I'm going to get off the soapbox. So, some thoughts about if I've decided that this is what calls my heart, these ecological crises, whether it's species loss or the treatment of animals or climate change, it's somewhere in this space. It's so hard to be with the way that we can feel so alone in how this world is objectified and used. You know, it's like it's its own task not to fall into bitterness sometimes, not to just get caught in anger and entrapped by our own frustration with this that we feel like, why don't other people see what we're doing? What we collectively are doing. And how do I effectively work with this tangle? You know, the Jata Sutta, where the Buddha talks about the tangle within the tangle. So this, to me, is part of the work, is working on the tangle that's internal, the tangle that's interpersonal, and the tangle that's collective. So the inner tangle, so I have the Jata Sutta, this tangle within, the tangle without. Sentient things are entangled in a tangle. I would ask of you, Gautama, this. Who can untangle this tangle? When a wise person, established well in virtue, develops consciousness and understanding, then as a seeker with concentration, patience, insight, that person may untangle this tangle. Consciousness, understanding, concentration, practice, and insight. Can we throw compassion in there too? So it's not like this, right? That's not how we untangle the tangle. We untangle the tangle by pressing, counterintuitively pressing the ends together, creating space, being curious, investigating. What's going on there? If I have a shoestring that's tangled, it's not going to work to yank on it. Push it together, investigate. So in this, to me, the first task is to manage, is to bring what this practice brings, which is that mindfulness, that interest, and then the management of the reactivity, the bringing of compassion, of space, to allow the pain that's here, to affirm it as the earth's fragmentation speaking through this body, the sense of a sacredness being denied, and how that hurts. If it hurts my body that mountaintops have been removed, that says that I am connected to those mountaintops. They are part of me. If it hurts to see the way that animals are treated, it's evidence of my connection. So to bring compassion and understanding and affirmation that what's under that is love. and then to recognize how hard it is to stay in that tender place that's actually open and connected. Escape routes abound. So easy to go off into rage. So easy to go, you know what, I'm just not going to care anymore. It hurts too much. I'm going to try numbness. That doesn't work too well to me. It's like purposely trying numbness. Or I'm just going to completely disassociate. Or I'll go into despair. Despair actually isn't connected. Despair knows that it's over, that it's not worth it, or it's all going to hell. We actually don't know. We don't know what comes of this. So to stay on what can feel like a razor's edge, that over time, if we walk that and we don't fall off into rage and we don't fall off into despair, to walk that, it starts to become smoother and wider and actually starts to hold us walking that path. It starts to build a groove where it's tender and connected. Martine Prechtel is a cultural anthropologist and Apache, member of the Apache tribe. And he has a beautiful little book called The Smell of Rain on Dust, where he talks about the need to the nature of this connected heart is moving always between grief and praise, and grief and praise. And that just feels so true to me. Part of that tenderness, when it's in balance, is completely available for joy and the wonder of this world. Still, eyes open, heart open, mind ready to receive not just the loss, but the resilience, the beauty. What kind of flowers are those?
Primrose.
Primrose. I mean, the cosmos through a primrose. So this, what we're told is that if we turn towards this suffering, we can't handle it. But we find that we can. We find that this heart can learn how to stay in that connected state that becomes a holding. Can start to feel held by, Chumpa Rinpoche called the quivering heart. Can be tricky to ask, what do we expect of others? What should we expect of others? So I have a theory about that in all of these collective crises, the opportunity we have is to ask of each other personal responsibility, household responsibility, and then for those who have sufficient comfort and safety to follow a longing at the systemic level. So what does that look like? So while Julie is working on gun control, I can say, you know what, I might want to buy a gun, but I'm not going to buy a gun for myself. I'm going to work on climate change, but I'm also not going to buy a gun. And Mark's working on race, and I'm not going to work on race, because I'm going to work on climate. I've got to give myself to, if I try to work on everything, I just can't do it. Or maybe I, anyway, that's complicated. But because I actually try to do both. Crazy. He's going to work on race, but I'm going to make it part of my personal responsibility to understand how race dynamics work and take responsibility for my own inevitable internalized racial hierarchy. Not my fault, definitely my responsibility. Mm-hmm. So as I work in my climate advocacy circles, I'm going to watch for the ways in which we perpetuate racial hierarchy and white supremacy. So I'll take that responsibility, even though we're not about race. And I'm going to ask the people who are working on gun control and who are working on race to change their diet, change their energy use, change their transportation habits to take care of the planet and be wildly successful on gun control and race and gender and all those other things I said, an economy that works for all and that. Right? This, I think, we can and should ask of each other. You know, I'm not playing the climate card, but I'm saying I think we have a right and a responsibility to ask that of each other. And I have a responsibility to understand race and the nature of violence and how it is I perpetuate economic disenfranchisement, etc. For me, this isn't about saving the planet. It's not about saving nature. It's about saving and honoring my relationship to nature. It's about giving this heart free rein to be devoted to love and to embody that love as fiercely as I can. To question everything that feels like it's in the way of that. This deepest longing that I have, and whatever longing that's deepest that you might have, to help you unfetter the heart that is devoted to that proximate threat in this whole earth body, that we are all little cells responding by being exactly aligned with that wants to be whole, that wants to see and honor this incredible beauty, the cosmos through a primrose. The other thing that I think we can sometimes, I'll just say one more thing, we can sometimes get caught in this, like, I so want us to have good strategy, okay? I'm a huge fan of good strategy. And we can really get caught in, like, but is what I'm going to do, is it matter? Is it going to matter? Is it really going to make a difference? This thing, the problem, this binary of saving is really, really can be debilitating, because the truth is it doesn't work like that, right? 5 degrees warmer is better than 7. 3 is better than 5. 1.5 is better than 2. Everything we do matters. Yes, we so need to be strategic, but asking, I don't know, everybody in this room is committed to acting. So it's not so much of, you know, this condition of like, but will it make a difference? But we can encounter that skepticism in the world, and it's important to know how to respond to it. I do this because I love. And everything we do matters so much. There's a pinch point coming of life. And everything we do that loves this world widens that. And a few more beings get through. And if that's two frogs, I'd love frogs. Or maybe it's in a whole species of frogs. Is it people? I don't know. Not my business. Not my business to know. I just do what I love. And if even if what I do is my swan song to this world, great. That's what's on offer. So I have some inquiries for us, or we can just go into conversation. But thank you for your attention. Thank you for inviting me to be part of this Bristol dance.
Thank you.
I don't know how it is a feeling, but I feel it's very potent what you've been saying, and actually just a few minutes just sort of receiving some of that and letting it percolate in a bit. I find quite helpful.
Okay, should we take like 2 minutes to sit? Does that feel alright? Great. So what feels right? Just share responses into the room and have a conversation.
So we did the triads, how would that? You have some inquiry questions?
Yeah. You want to hear what the questions were going to be?
Yeah.
So you guys could do these, you know, in some other time, or we could do them tonight. Yeah, so quote from Nietzsche. If we know the why, we can handle almost any how. So kind of following that notion that I was putting out, that even if my love, even if my devotion, even if my work for the healing and the seeing of nature and the, whatever it is for you, the stopping the harm. You know, Joanna Macy has the three, what did she call them? The three categories of response to the contributions to the great turning. Stopping the harm, creating positive alternatives, or changing consciousness. So those are the places we can work. So we can have a broad definition of engagement and activism. It doesn't have to look just one way. The sort of stopping the harm activism is fabulous. We so need that. And it's not the only way to show up for this project of what she calls the great turning, the shift towards an awareness and an embodiment of a just and sustainable world. So, finding my place in those categories and what I feel called to do, and with just sort of like that feeling that there's like this star that I'm following, and that's what I'm following, and the terrain is the terrain, and it's sometimes smooth and downhill and lovely, and sometimes it's just like circuitous and full of brambles and painful and hard. But I'm still following that star. So I feel like that's what Nietzsche is pointing to. If I know the why, I can handle almost any how. If I have that star, the terrain is the terrain. I just, whatever's in front of me, that's what I'm working with. And I get fed by following that star. So the question that I was going to ask you was, what do you love? How do you love? And how does this love meet and affirm other loves? Let your life be a prayer. What would that prayer be? So maybe that's a journaling exercise or something we could do together. Any thoughts?
I would be interested in that. I think I wonder, Julia, about doing the
work. Check the temperature in your room. For triads or whole group reflection, is that right? You could do the
smooth prayer.
Susan, do you want me to?
Walking in threes.
Up to nine.